Brand new album by the Fort Apache Band. The leader is Jerry Gonzalez. He's here with us in the studio today at Cafe LA. Jerry.
How you doing?
All right. Thanks for coming down here.
Hey, glad to be here.
Jerry, tell us a little bit about growing up in the Bronx, you know, and what it sort of puts in your system and your brother Andy and the Gonzalez household.
Well, you gotta fight to survive, you know, in the Bronx, either physically or musically. You know, it's like trial by fire. You know, you learn things. You go to the park and there's cutting contests. I mean, there was cutting contests when we were kids. It was, instead of fist fighting, everybody go to the park and try to cut each other up on the drums. You know, so everybody be bleeding at the end of the afternoon. You know.
And you were one of those kids.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well,
we were gunslingers.
Well, which is your, you know, it's unusual to have a trumpet player that plays congas, too. I mean, what was the first, you know?
My trumpet was the first instrument, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then I had an unfortunate accident, which kept me, I busted a leg. So it kept me still enough. And a friend of mine brought a conga drum to the house and started practicing all the Mongo stuff. Mongo was my first role model.
Now, is Andy your older brother?
No, he's my younger brother.
He's your younger brother?
Yeah, I'm the oldest. About 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Now, he, of course, is one of the great bassists in music. I mean, everybody loves your brother.
Yeah.
He's very, very much in demand. Was there any sibling rivalry or anything?
No.
It's always happening. No. Well, how come you guys got into music? I mean,
my father.
Yeah?
My father was a singer in the Mambo era.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And, you know, they used to rehearse in the house and... I mean, a lot of musical things were happening in my home, you know. And my father was a hi-fi freak, you know. So he's always bringing records into the house, you know. First one I brought the Louis Armstrong record and a Charlie Parker record that blew my mind when I was 10 years old. And Cal Jada, you know, Puente, Machito, Palmieri. We grew up with all of that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you do some very, very interesting renderings of classics. I'm always excited when I see you do, a standard like the one we're going to hear next, which I think is just an amazing version of Nefertiti. First of all, the song is amazing enough as it is, the way it moves through the chords and stuff.
Well, Wayne Shorter is one of my favorite composers, you know, and his music is different, you know, it has a different... kind of roadmaps to it, you know. It's a little more challenging to play the music also because of the way he moves his chords is a lot different than some standard cats, you know.
And the percussion treatment that you've given Nefertiti in this version we're going to hear is really fantastic.
The Guido.
Yeah. Thank you. the amazing first record of Jerry Gonzalez. This produced by, I guess, Kip Hanrahan for American Clave.
Well, he just sat by.
He just sat by. Yeah. It means Yayo me cure. It means it's, like I'm clean.
No. Cure is like
healed.
You could use it as healed. You could use that as a satisfaction. You know, it's like it's like what you might say in slang, in street slang, after you eat a good meal or you have a good lady. You know, or, you know, after really appreciating something that you need really well.
Yeah.
You go, ya yo me curé. You know.
We were talking off mic a little bit about Cuba, and your background is Puerto Rican, but your music thing is Cuban.
It's Cuban and Puerto Rican. Being raised in New York and around that whole, it's the center of the universe, you know what I mean? So you get a little bit of everything from every culture there, you know? And, you know, I hung out in the projects with the Italians, the Jews, the Chinese, the Dominicans, the Cubans, the Mexicans. You know, I hung out with everybody, the Irish, you know. And I got to see, you know, as a kid, and I got to see the little differences in their cultures, their grandfathers, the way they would treat, you know.
How come the African element comes out so much more strongly in Cuban music than it does in Puerto Rican music?
Well, there was a dominant slave trade happening in Cuba at the time. I mean, they were actually breeding slaves in Cuba. And it was one of the countries that abolished slavery at a later time than most other countries. Like in this country, it was like in the 1860s, you know, when slavery was, you know, the Civil War canceled that out, you know. And in Cuba, it was till 1888, which was 20 years later, you know. And I mean, that's where everybody would go shopping, you know. Because, you know, they didn't want to go all the way to Africa to go cop, so they would go to Cuba, you know. And they didn't take the cultures away from the people, you know, that came. I mean, there were many different Africans from different parts of Africa with different cultural backgrounds that were brought there, you know, and each one of them maintained their traditional, you know, music, chants, religion, and it's still, till today, it still exists.
So what happened in America?
America, they took the drum away. They made them not speak the language. They knew the drum was a communicator. So, you know, I mean, they took that away from them and separated all the families, you know, and relatives. They did a real job of dividing and conquering, you know. I often imagine what this country would, the music in this country would be like if they didn't. And I think that it would be very much like the Caribbean, you know, like Cuba, you know. They'd become, I mean, the last place that was a carnival here that's anything like any carnival in South America, you know, like Brazil and in Cuba, is in New Orleans, Congo Square. That was the only place in the country where they allowed the blacks that remembered some of their tradition and had access to some drums and stuff would go and do their thing, man, you know, for a lot of time that they allowed them to do it, once a year.
Jerry Gonzalez is with us here at Cafe LA. He leads the Fort Apache Band. So why do you call it Fort Apache?
Fort Apache is the name, nickname of the Bronx in New York City. If you saw the movie with Paul Newman in it, Fort Apache, the Bronx, it tells a story of, like, how police were abusing the community. And, you know, it was like heroin going on in the community, right? And the cops were the ones that were dealing it and protecting the dealers in the neighborhood. And then they were also murdering people, you know. And the community rose up against the cops. They stormed the police station and had the cops in the police station. You know, it was just like one of them Fort Apache things in John Wayne, you know. Everybody's in the fort and the Indians are attacking the fort, you know. So that was the parallel to that, you know. So the community called the police station, the precinct, Fort Apache. And then it extended into the Bronx, you know, into the Bronx.
Gotcha.
And, you know, the reason I call it Fort Apache is in the movie, it projected a lot of stereotypes that were pretty negative about Puerto Ricans and Latinos in general that lived in the Bronx. And we were all you know, terrorists, burglars, drug addicts, murderers, and thieves, etc. And I call it that so we could contradict the stereotype. You know, there's artists and a lot of creative people in the Bronx that come from Latino roots, you know, poets, dancers, sculptors, singers, and, you know, so that's why we did that.
I'm going to hear a piece with the name of an African saint, right? Alegua?
Alegua. Alegua is the guardian of the crossroads, and he opens and closes the religious ceremonies. He opens the door to your destiny.
All right. Jerry Gonzalez of the Fort Apache Band.
Thank you.
recorded in Blues Alley at Blues Alley in Washington, D.C., yeah. The Fort Apache Band with our guest, Jerry Gonzalez. This piece is called Elegua.
Yeah, that's for El Santo Elegua.
Isn't it interesting that in Cuba, you still have Yoruba spoken, and the linguists come from Lagos to study the archaic Yoruba in Cuba.
There's a thing that people say that the tradition is held up more stronger and purer in Cuba than it is right now in Africa. That's what I've been told.
Really fascinating. Mm-hmm. One of your mentors, reading your bio, was a guy named Lou Matthews, and I don't know anything about Lou Matthews. Who is Lou Matthews?
Llewellyn, that's how we knew him, Llewellyn. Llewellyn Matthews is a pianist and a French horn player, vibes. He plays everything. When we were 16 years old, we had a 24-piece big band that he used to arrange for. He's one of these cats with perfect pitch. He could write an arrangement on the subway. You know, sitting in the subway, just doing it. And right now he's playing piano with Nancy Wilson. He's her musical director, yeah. And, we go way back to when we were kids, like at the park wading pool. We used to look in the garbage cans for newspapers to stuff up all the drains so we could bring the water level up so we could at least dive in the middle of the pool. That's how far I know Llewellyn, you know. And he taught me and my brother a great deal, you know. I learned how to transcribe. He was the one who checked all the transcriptions that I would make when I was a kid. And when I finally got it right, and he told me that I had it right, that's when I realized I had it down.
You spent 3 years on the road with Eddie Palmieri.
No, a little more than that, yeah. Almost five.
You hear a lot of stories about Eddie Palmieri. He's pretty wild guy. Can you recall a particularly crazy night with him for us?
Every night was a crazy night with him.
How do you keep a band like that together? I mean,
well, the music keeps it together. That's what it does, you know. I mean, I paid a lot of dues there. There were a lot of nights that you know, certain people would walk in and we'd know we wouldn't get paid that night, you know. The main thing is he's one of the baddest montuneros in the country. And it was a thrill to play with him. And I learned a great deal from playing with his band, you know, which was important, very important. And that's why I paid the dues. At that time, I was like 18, 19 years old. I didn't have too many responsibilities. So I took it, you know, and learned from it. But then when it got to the point where he couldn't take it anymore, it was time to leave. And that's when we formed, Andy and Manuel Kendall formed Libre.
Yeah. You've worked with the great musicians. You've had the great bands of your own. How do you feel when you see this Cuban-American Oscar Higueles? Was it Higueles or Higueles?
Oh, yeah, Mambo King, man.
Yeah, how do you feel, you know, reading a book like that and then the movie comes out? You feel
it was like the way I grew up. I identified a lot of it because of what my father went through, you know, going from, you know, all kinds of whatever jobs he could get and then sing on us, you know, at the same time, you know. In fact, I auditioned for the movie. they called me about four times to be in it, you know, but then I went on the road and some stuff changed up and they made it out here instead of in New York. It was supposed to be a New York movie, you know, because all the whole scene, everything took place in New York. But I guess they Hollywoodized it, you know. They lose sight of some of that stuff, you know. You know, because it's part of New York history, you know.
Jerry, who are you listening to these days? Who are the hottest bands that you?
Well, I'm not
listening
to anything very new anymore. You know.
Okay. Well, who are the?
I'm listening to Arsenio Rodriguez. You know, Chapotín. You know, Los Muñequitos, Afro Cuba. Aragon, you know, Coltrane, Bird, Diz, Miles, Woody Shaw, Clifford Brown, you know, Art Blakey, Max Roach, Elvin Jones, Philly Joe Jones, I'm still listening to them because that music is still fresh and still alive and there's still a lot to learn from it. A lot of the new stuff now is just like, younger cats trying to play the older stuff, and it's not quite mature enough yet. It ain't gonna teach you anything too much. You know, if you listen to Art Blakey, I mean, you're gonna learn something from it. You know, as compared to, you know, yeah, you know, one of your Shirley Temples or your Stymies out there. You know.
It's too bad. Do you know whether Coltrane ever played with a Roomba band or like a Muñequito and Coltrane or
that
something?
That would have perfectly worked.
But I mean,
worked.
one of the Village Gate sessions or something like that in New York.
It would have worked if that encounter happened. I often dreamt of it, you know. And like when I about 1967, I played some gigs with Llewellyn Matthews and Kenny Durham and my brother and Team Bob player named Freddie Munar, who passed away. And we had a little Latin jazz group, and we played in the Lower East Side, and Jackie Bayard, Rashid Ali, a whole bunch of people came to check us out because they heard that Kenny was there. And when they saw the rhythm section that Kenny was in, it blew everybody away. And I met Rashid at that time, and that was recently after Train died. And I did a lot of playing with Rashid Ali. A lot. We had a group together, me, him, and Clifford Thornton. And I often imagined that if Train was still alive, I would have encountered him at that time. And there might have been an exchange, you know, which I often fantasize about, you know. Because when I hear Los Muñequitos, I can hear Train in there, very much so, and McCoy, you know. Because that the muñecos or the rumba feeling, you know, that it has blues in it. It has that modal blues in it, and it's the same thing as Train, you know. You know.
We're gonna close with a piece called Verdad Amarga.
Yeah, that's a beautiful bolero written by Consuelo Velasquez. It's a Mexican composer, and this is a rendition of it. The first version of it I heard was sung by Lucho Gatica, and who's really one of my favorite bolero singers, you know. And it inspired me to do this, you know.
You're listening to Cafe LA here at KCRW. Thank you. You play both trumpet and conga drums.
Yes, sir.
And those, was trumpet your first instrument?
Trumpet was first, yeah. And then in junior high school, I picked up a trumpet, started playing Sousa marches because I went to John Philip Sousa Junior High School.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And then used to run home, throw the trumpet under the bed, and go out and play basketball. Mm-hmm. And then took it seriously and started practicing to get my audition together for Music and Art High School. Mm-hmm. And I remember I played Desafinado. For the audition.
Jobim class.
Yeah, and everyone else played the Haydn trumpet concerto, and I didn't know about the Haydn trumpet concerto at that time, you know. Mm-hmm. After Music and Art, it taught me all of that stuff about Haydn and Bach and Chick Gabrielli and all kinds of different classical music.
Did you play the classics too?
Yes.
Yeah, you did.
Mm-hmm. I was in the classical orchestra for a while in this school. Mm-hmm. But then I aimed for the jazz band in the school.
Miles Davis have an influence on you? Because your sound reminds me of a certain type of sort of punctuated staccato.
Most definitely
edge.
He was a very major role model. You know, Freddie Hubbard and Lee Morgan and Booker Little and Woody Shaw.
And the Mexican trumpet players too?
Rafael
Mendez.
Yeah, Mendez.
Right? Yeah. Does being a conga player or a conguero, as they say in Spanish, affect the way you play trumpet, and vice versa, does being a trumpet player affect the way you play congas?
Well,
I notice you have five congas, which allows you to basically make melodies and play songs and melodically on the.
I have a good perspective on the whole situation. You know, some guys just play drums and they don't know anything about harmony and melody, and if they can't sing the tune, they're not going to really be able to play it, you know, with the right intention. They're just playing time and marking it, you know. And I always tell drummers, I mean, you know, I said, drummers, you know, learn to play a melodic instrument. It'll help you get the whole picture, you know. Mm-hmm. So when I play a tune, I know the song inside out. Mm-hmm. And I play my drums to that song, you know. I know the form. I know where to release and where to hold back, you know. And it's important, you know.
I know when Indian classical musicians learn an instrument, a sitar or a sarod or whatever, or a tabla, they have to learn how to sing everything first.
Yeah. Well, it's all oral traditional music, you know. Everything is learned by word.
Jerry Gonzalez is with us in the studio. Let's listen to something fun. This is, you did a version of the Lucy theme on a record that goes back. It's called Yayo Mekure.
That was a goof when we did it.
Just a funny little thing. Huh?
Come on, let's do this, man, just to put it in perspective of Desi.
Okay.
Bud Powell goes to the Lucy theme with Hilton Ruiz on piano. Mm-hmm.
Is the trumpet kind of a brutal instrument? I mean, in terms of having to beating up your lip and having swollen lip all the time and scar tissue all over your lower lip and stuff.
Well, it depends on how you play, how hard you play.
You look at Freddie Hubbard's lips, for instance, and he always, or even Louis Armstrong's lips, have always had a big thing there where you.
Well, it starts to take your shapes into your body, you know. Mm-hmm. Becomes an extension of yourself. It feels comfortable to put it on there. You know?
Mm-hmm. Is it hard to kiss your girlfriend when you're a trumpet player?
No, it actually improves it.
Oh, yeah? Okay. Always wanted to know that. Now, you grew up, you have a younger brother, Andy, who was one of the best bass players and who plays, of course, with the Fort Apache Band.
That's right. And he's also co-leader of Libre with Manny Oquendo.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic group.
And we've taken part in quite a bit of music in New York, music history, in Grupo Folklorico, Bobby Panero. So many things. I mean, Jaco Pastorius, Sonny Fortune, Tito Puente, Eddie Palmieri. There's a lot of stuff we've done, and I've been fortunate to be around that and be part of it.
Well, we're fortunate to have you. Our time is up. We're going to listen to one more piece, and this is a piece that you wrote for a baseball player.
No, we didn't write it. Cal Jada wrote it.
Oh, yeah?
For Peruchin Cepeda, Orlando Cepeda, baseball player that used to play Major League Baseball, who just got into the Hall of Fame, you know, and they made a big thing in Puerto Rico with him, met the governor and the whole deal, and he's a fan of the band, a real fan of the band.
Once again, Jerry Gonzalez, you're always welcome here. Thanks
Thank
so much
you,
for stopping by.
Thank you very much.
Jerry Gonzalez and the Fort Apache Band.